It's 7 o'clock, and we do have the correct number of people here to start a meeting, so I am going to call this meeting of the Environment and Land Use Committee to order. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Ms. Ammons?
Ammons.
Ammons, I'm sorry. Ms. Anderson? Mr. Dennett? Mr. Jones? Mr. Kurtz?
Here.
Mr. Langenheim?
Here.
Mr. Mosher's absent. Mr. Schrader is absent. Ms. Wysocki?
Here.
Quorum established.
Thank you. I need a motion to approve our agenda for this evening. Motion moved by Mr. Kurtz, seconded by Mr. Jones. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion to approve the minutes of December 18th, 2008. Motion by Mr. Langenheim, seconded by Ms. Ammons. Is there any discussion of the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We do not have any correspondence as such tonight. So we'll move on to item 5, which is the chair's report. And I thought that since I don't have much anything to communicate, I thought maybe this would be a good opportunity for those of you who had been at one or more of last week's wind farm marathon might want to share some of your impressions, things that you learned, things that you had never thought about before. Mr. Kurtz?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I visited two, actually. On a Thursday afternoon at the university, there was a 12 to 1 o'clock seminar from a gentleman who owns land in McLean County. He owns 260 acres. First name Randall. I'm sorry, don't remember his last name. He has on 260 acres four wind turbines that he's had for over 3 years now. We talked about, he gave us a great overview from almost the inception of the turbine controversy, if you want to call it, back from 2001, and it took nearly 5 years for them to place a turbine on his property in 2005. They went over an awful lot of details, and I want to congratulate John Hall for the work he's doing. It's quite extensive, and we've been reading up. We just received a packet of information concerning the ordinances yesterday. He gave us a great explanation of how a wind turbine is placed on a piece of property right from the inception. Horizon is the wind developer of these turbines, and that company was extremely cooperative with all of the entities involved, right from the governments to the farm and landowners. And we asked many questions of him concerning noise, maintenance, how many acres were out of production, returning the land to its original use, the repair and inspection, the jobs that were created, he felt very, very comfortable and very positive about the situation of having four of these wind turbines, which he was being paid $5,000 per turbine. Now, on Saturday morning, we drove with a large group of officials from Champaign to a Farm Bureau tour of another area and another farm of wind turbines, and actually had a chance to stand under one of these just incredible pieces of equipment. It's quite awesome when you walk close to them on how massive they are and what the future it can bring. The positive aspect of energy independence is quite important, I think, and this is one step into the 21st century energy independence, and much of the concern was about noise, and a lot of the concerns were about how it affected the property. And this gentleman had only 120 acres. And of the 120 acres, he was able to place three wind turbines on his property at $5,000 a year for the 30-year lease. He thinks that the acre and a half that was used to place three turbines, including the access roads, could never be farmed at a profit of $15,000 a year for that acre and a half that he used for these turbines, and leased these turbines. Matter of fact, we talked about the shadow, a flicker, they call it, onto his property, and the noise. He felt that there was absolutely no concern. The noise seems to disappear into a white noise over time. And it's a little bit like when I was very young and first married, we lived in Queens, New York, on the glide path for JFK. Every 30 seconds above our heads, about 200 feet over our apartment, a jet plane would land. When we first moved there, obviously we were very concerned about the noise and about the level of the concern for our children. And within a few weeks, we didn't hear the planes anymore, even though they were there. So overall, I think we've had a very positive couple of days in learning more about wind turbines and the positive effect they can have on the community, especially the dollars that will be gleaned by the county. Thank you.
Jan?
Well, I just went on the Farm Bureau one on Saturday, and Al's referred to a number. I just really appreciated the day hearing not only from Horizons, but the farmer, and I thought the township supervisor, his remarks were interesting, too, and how he worked with, you know, the company and with the people, and it shows how complex it is. And I think the other thing that came across, learned a lot, but I won't go into all of it, but was the importance of doing it very carefully. And I don't know whether all of the companies are that cooperative or not, but I was real impressed with the man from Horizons and their feeling of wanting to work with the community and the planners and, you know, everybody. I thought it was a very, very good experience.
Mr. Langenheim?
I went to the
Hensley
Township meeting on Thursday.
Use your microphone.
I went to the Hensley Township meeting on Thursday, and there were supervisors there, and there was representation from one of the developers, and also representation from the municipal utility in Rantoul. A couple of the township supervisors had a plan for which they had a great deal of enthusiasm, setting up a cooperative of farmers to set up wind farms, generate the power, sell it to the utilities, and rebate the proceeds, the profits to township government. There was a great deal of enthusiasm for that, but also a great deal of wondering just about how to go about it. I don't know whether we're going to hear more about that or not, but being a solid adherent for public utilities, I think it's a step in the right direction. Probably won't go anywhere. Had a conflict on the wind farm seminar for sustainable tech, which was held on Thursday, so I didn't go to that because I was going to go to the Farm Bureau thing on Saturday, and I got aced out on the Farm Bureau thing. I had a health problem.
Good. Jan?
I can't remember his name. I'm not on policy, but I came to the policy meeting, and the township supervisor at Hensley.
He was there.
He was there, and, you know, but he was also on the tour, and I don't know what he felt after the tour. It would be interesting to see, because all the work that went into setting it up seemed very complex. maybe I'm not as enthusiastic. It just seemed like the amount of money you would have to invest in the planning and working was kind of overwhelming if you didn't know what you were getting into.
Ms. Ammons?
I just wanted to ask, I didn't get a chance to go up to the Farm Bureau one, but if there's some information that was recorded that explains further how jobs are created from it, how does the county benefit from this energy independence idea, and if it generates income for the county, how? I understand how it benefits the individual family, but how it benefits the county, I have not seen the answer to that yet. And so was this recorded? Is there any information? The packet that we got does not explain that to me. The developers, of course, want to develop, so that's what they give you. But I haven't seen how it go beyond the individual benefits.
I know that individuals were taking notes at various points throughout. I think there were some points, particularly when we were at the actual site of one, it would have been a little hard to take notes in all that wind and noise going on. But we can certainly look around to see if someone does have a reasonably comprehensive set of notes that they'd be willing to share. I can say that by virtue of having been to the East Central Illinois Economic Development District meeting, which was really about economic and development as it affects, or as it's affected by wind farms, the numbers seem to vary about how many jobs will actually be created. Obviously, I think the two presentations that I've heard all point to the fact that when they bring in the construction crews, for example, to erect these things, you know, you're talking about maybe 200 construction workers who are spending money in a community by virtue of staying overnight or eating in local restaurants or taking in local entertainment or something along those lines. But of course, we know that construction work comes to an end, and then it all subsides. What I heard is that what they will leave behind are a group of what they call technicians who are responsible for the daily care and maintenance of these wind turbines. There are a number of programs being started at community colleges and I believe even the University of Illinois to provide the training and the necessary skills for this group of people to do this job of inspection, necessary maintenance, or whatever. What did we hear? That once every, how frequently do they actually walk up one of these towers?
Three times a year,
yeah.
For each turbine.
For each turbine.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I think they mentioned that one job, a maintenance person, a technician, for like every 10 or 15 wind turbines. Mm-hmm. So if you have 200, 250 turbines, you can figure out how many permanent positions there would be.
Right. I think I remember it seemed like it was around 50 or something that they have for their, 246.
Right.
And I remember one of the people in the group asking about, and that was this particular Horizon company, but whether they look to local people for hiring.
Right.
And he said they where they could find people with those skills, they hired locally, and if they weren't able to, then they brought.
And that's why they were working on education,
right,
in the marketplace, so that they can hire more local people.
Mr. Weibel, did you have something, Dan?
I heard it say they employed 50, and somebody else said 52 people permanently at the Twin Golds farm. And I agree that they said they tried to hire local labor, sort of countywide, as much as possible. Now, they did not say how many. They had to bring it from outside, but they did say they made that attempt.
Mr. Dennett?
The answer to her question about revenue for government is there's assessed valuation attached to each tower, and it's taxed.
Right. Which?
2.9
Which is obviously a benefit for school districts in those rural communities. So I think that certainly becomes an added incentive right there. Mr. Weibel?
I have asked Mr. Welch to confer with the Treasury in McLean County to try to determine how much increased revenue we get from a single wind turbine on the average.
And also, the financial gain for the farmer, many of whom are sitting right on the edge of either bankruptcy or not making a profit concerning their crops, these additional dollars are very, very helpful to them. And I think that certainly they should have a great input into deciding their own land if they want to have these turbines on them.
Anyone else? John Hall and I were at the meeting on Wednesday in Peoria where they talked about siting and taxation issues and a variety of other related things. There were about 300 people from all across the state who were at that meeting. You know, obviously some of these were landowners themselves, some were county officials, people involved in the industry as well. I mean, it really was a broad spectrum of people. And they basically divided the day into three panels, each panel having four people, and they sort of focused on a particular subject or a phase of it, which were the ones outlined on the little brochure, the program that we all received. This was, to me, I think this was sort of Wind Farms 101, because they covered a spectrum of things from four different perspectives, which were all good. I mean, there was an attorney, there was again a developer, there were landowners, there county officials, a potpourri of individuals, but they really did sort of skim the surface on some of these things. And one of the things that I heard at this meeting that I hadn't heard at any of the other meetings that I was at was that many communities are creating enterprise zones on which these wind farms are erected, which means, of course, that by creating enterprise zone status, their taxes are deferred for either a 5 or a 10-year period, depending on how the legislation is written. I guess I never thought about that. I figured this is farmland, but obviously putting enterprise zones there would, I assume, make some sense. I think that would probably require a little thought at our end about whether we wanted to go to that extent. I have yet to hear a developer say that they are desperately in need of enterprise zone status. Certainly, I didn't get the sense that Verizon was in that spot. And, you know, they really see the future in electrical power coming from wind farm development. And they're very excited and anxious about technology changes in the next 10, 15, 20 years, which will obviously enable them to be in the forefront of all this. So I think it's something that we need to at least keep in the back of our minds. John had shared with me via email some of his thoughts based on Saturday's excursion. Do you want to pass out your comments? These are more in the form of bullet statements, bullet points. Did I think he addresses some of the issues that came up, that came out of the Q&A sessions that we attended, and was kind enough to indicate how we are addressing those particular issues in the special use permit that is about to go before the ZBA. So you might want to make a point to read these. If you have some specific questions, you can certainly raise them with John at some other time. Anyone else? Mr. Dennett.
I think it's important to note that Dwight Farber was representative of Horizon, but the other two of the other three people that spoke, actually all three of them, actually made Horizon look very good. The Highway Commissioner spoke highly of getting along with Horizon, bending over backwards to do what was right. The landowner, in my opinion, said the same thing, and so did the zoning administrator.
Mm-hmm.
They basically didn't have any issues with Horizon at all. I don't think that's the case that I was getting the vibes from the zoning administrator about Invergy. He was kind of indicating, if I picked up right, that they weren't quite as easy to get along with. But I think it's important to note that all three of these other people who are aside from Horizon thought that things went very well. And I think the landowner was the only one that had a couple of minor issues, and I think it's just because they didn't think about them.
Mm-hmm. Since you were the only road commissioner, did you find in your counterpart's comments, did you find anything that raised an eyebrow on your part? Or?
Yeah, one thing in particular, that they actually went in and reconstructed 34 miles of road for that township. And keep in mind that there's two other townships involved. He's just one.
Mm-hmm.
But they reconstructed 34 miles, if my memory serves me right, out of 52. That's a huge expense.
And I think he also said that the gravel roads they put back in, what do you call it?
Yeah, what was chipping originally just gravel roads, when they were done, they did oil and chip everything.
Yeah.
I have contacted him and two or three of us are going to go have a meeting with him. Seemed like a very informed young man.
Mr. Kurtz?
I took a quick read on John's bullet points here, and he seems to have more of a disagreement, I guess, from what we saw there. He, of course, is more experienced in zoning and things of that sort, but I mean, I have to give some weight to people who have had wind turbines on their land for 3 years or 4 years, and give a lot of weight to the positive attitude and the positive reception that we received from McLean County about their wind turbines. And though, John, you seem to have quite a few more, let's say, not necessarily negative, but concerns about a wind farm and working the way McLean County did, I personally believe, honestly, that wind farms are the future, and we should work through our own auspices to not make it easy, make sure that they follow, you know, chapter and verse of what we feel is important. But I don't want to put them at a disadvantage where they will say, well, we'll go to another county because there's just too much paperwork or too much detail. They seem to be very cooperative, or this, at least this company, wanting to do whatever was necessary so that they could help generate that electricity. So I will take your concerns, obviously, and we'll be able to discuss that in the future, of course. Thank you.
Mr. Dennett.
One other thing I think is also important to note, and it was very prevalent when we left the visitor center and got on Route 9 headed toward Bloomington, that there was a comment made that one landowner didn't want to be involved. It was a trust farm that had been in the family for years. It looked to me like 320 acres, a half section, that they just totally skipped over. If the people didn't want it, over it they went.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember, I think, that they do not have the right of eminent domain. They can't make a yeah. landowner do something they don't want. So it's got to be by negotiation.
I just wanted to add that the minute Jeff Ballew heard about the proposed wind farms, he contacted McLean County and got copies of both the agreement with McLean County and the agreement with the townships, and each of those are like 40 pages long. And I used those for the drafting the proposed ordinance, and Jeff's already provided me some comments on that. So Jeff, at least, has, as you heard at the discussion on Saturday, they used the McLean County approach as a model, and Jeff thinks that's a good model, and we're using that as the basis for our, at least the roads part.
Mr. Langenheim?
Just for the record, that portion of the Mar del Moraine that goes through Leroy up to Bloomington is a superior wind resource than the portion of the Moraine that we have,
right,
by considerable.
Yeah. Mr. Weibel?
Mr. Blue has told me he plans to visit several of the wind farms in LaSalle County just to inspect the roads and talk to the road commissioners up there, I assume, to the county engineer. I'm not sure when he's going to do that, but sometime this spring.
Mr. Dennis?
I can answer that. There's five of us going to Bureau County Wednesday morning.
When?
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock.
This Wednesday morning?
This Wednesday morning.
Oh. Okay. Anyone else? Well, thank you for your input. I think it helps after 48 hours that everything is settled a little bit to be able to articulate what impressed us. Okay. Moving right along. Is there anyone who in the public who wishes to speak? Mr. Burns, you want to say something at this point, or do you want to wait till we get to this particular subdivision? Okay. Ms. George, you're on the agenda, so we'll just hold off with you. Okay. Mr. Tag. Okay. All right. And Mr. Parrott. Okay. All right. Thank you.
I'd also signed the list over there.
And you are?
Dean Rose.
Okay. Are you here for a case?
Yes. The Country Arbors case.
Oh, okay. Do you want to wait till we get to that point?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Barnard, you don't wish to say anything? Okay. All right. Well, let's do our updates at this point. Susan Monte.
Hello. With the Land Resource Management Plan, we are having our next meeting this coming Thursday, February 19th. There has not been a meeting since the last month's ELUC, so there's not a news report about steering committee activity. However, in the past day or two, you've probably received in your mail the packet containing the revised set of goals, objectives, and policies. Probably, if you have any questions about those, feel free to contact the project staff, Susan Cheveria, or myself, and we'll respond to any particular questions you might have about those. We will be continuing our review of the goals and policies. We've made it through the rural policy, as you know, and there's only minor tweaks, in just very minor tweaks to those. We are about to begin the urban land use policies. So that's where we will commence this Thursday. We will be meeting at a rate of 2 meetings a month to stay on schedule or to try to retain the lost time. Are there any specific questions at this time? Yes.
Thank you, Susan. I did read through the packet, and I just had a general question, I guess, on the Land Resource Management Plan Goals, Objectives, and Policy, Item 4. I noticed there were about 4 or 5 new pages of goals and policies that showed up, and this is quite extensive. And I was curious where all this came from. And I can revert back to Objective 8.1 and go all the way through. That would be page 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, part of 15, and 3 on back of 16. That's quite extensive. I'm curious where all that came from.
Well, as you may recall, the previous draft for Goal 8, Natural Resources, addressed not an array of concerns that you see in this revised version. This revised version is comprehensive in its scope as far as addressing groundwater, which wasn't addressed in our last set, groundwater protection kind of concerns. Also included in this set is a policy provision for climate change, should that ever be a concern, for noise ordinances, for instance, light ordinances, all aspects of the environment that could improve the quality of life for Champaign County residents are included here. It's an expanded set, as you know. We just found a lot of ways to improve upon the last set of natural resource goals and policies, because we just hadn't considered the hierarchy of every level of the environment that could be considered. If you think about it, below ground, surface, above ground, if you think about it in very logical terms like that, and that's the kind of analysis that did occur here. And that's why it's an expanded set.
Then, did staff generate this new material I just mentioned? Was this all staff generated, or was this generated somewhere else?
It's not copied off of any existing document that I'm aware of. It has been generated through collaboration with RPC staff, through consultation with other persons who have commented on this. It's just not picked up off of any existing document. It's a collaborative effort based on specific conditions here in Champaign County.
Okay, I'm just curious because it's a lot of policy, a lot of new policy, not just revised, not just policy changes within objectives. This is new objectives, new policy. So I was just curious, and I appreciate your answers. Thank you.
No problem. Yes.
Oh, Mr. Dennis.
Susan, I kind of question whether that was the intent of this committee when this started.
To have a comprehensive set of land.
To be doing it and not the committee. I thought that was the committee structure to do that, not the staff.
The committee definitely will have their review of this set, and they will comb it very rigorously and thoroughly, consider each one of these, and they will either accept, change, or add to this set of policies. I mean, why would it be a problem to have a comprehensive set of land use policies?
I don't really have a problem with a comprehensive set of land use policies. I have a problem with staff feeding the committee that kind of information without them coming up with it on their own. That's what I've got a problem with.
Well, that's what our job is I see it, is to provide information to assist the committee as they do their job. I mean, that's what I'm seeing as a role of a planner, is to provide information for consideration by a committee.
I think that provided by staff should be in general, not spelled out with the commas and the periods.
Oh, really? Okay.
Absolutely. I know when we voted on this to begin with, what you're doing was not the intent that I voted on.
Okay. Well, it's simply providing information to a committee. I mean, I certainly have no authority beyond what I understand is my job function. So the committee is free, and Barb, you can understand this more thoroughly and explain it perhaps. The committee is free to accept or reject any of this.
I think what I would say that this committee, because it is 18 people when it's at full strength, works better when they have something from staff to respond to, rather than as a group trying to create goals, policies, and objectives, just starting with a blank canvas. When the early stages of this process, committee members were invited to submit goals and objectives that had to do with land resource management planning, period, on any topic. And some of those were put into categories. A lot of them had to do with natural resources. Some of them had to do with farmland preservation. Some had to do with farmland preservation and urban growth and development. And this has, in effect, served as sort of the basis for whittling it down, putting it in some kind of order, and then moving it forward as policies, goals, and objectives. So,
in principle, I don't disagree with that. But one of the objectives, I thought, to get away from what we had to where we're going, was the fact that you wouldn't need a Philadelphia lawyer to decipher it when you were done. And I still think that's where you're headed.
That we will or won't need that lawyer.
It's going to take just what you got here. The average layperson is not going to get this. Period. Bag sitting over there at whatever rate per hour, like pay to decipher this thing. And this isn't even close to being done.
Well, But I would also say that I think a lot of what the committee is paying attention to is the ability of the Planning and Zoning Office to work with this document when it's done. I personally cannot tell you how valuable John's input has been, especially when you get to the wordsmithing in these goals, to say, does this phrase mean this or does it mean this? Because this contradicts with something else. And, you know, John has been very good about looking at this from the enforcement and the day-to-day use of this document. And the committee, at least from my vantage point, seems to be very attentive to that. So I think that's at least one of the standards that the committee is using, that the staff who has to work with this document is comfortable using it.
I don't per se have a problem with John's input or thoughts. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about taking the committee by the nose and leading them to water. I think that's what's going on. There might be three or four on that committee that don't do that, but quite frankly, I think the rest of them, that's what's going on.
Chris, if I could, I agree there are some surprising things in the current version of the goals, objectives, and policies. In my view, the things that are surprising don't really commit the county to doing anything other than going on record as having concerns about sustainability, renewable energy sources, and things like that. I think that
a plan for the county of Champaign in 2009, if it didn't at least mention things like that, we should be criticized for that. Now, that being said, if the steering committee strikes those, then they're stricken. But I firmly believe staff is not doing its job if it doesn't offer those as suggestions, which is really all those are at this point. They're suggestions. They're suggestions because if they're not included, the committee can be criticized for just completely overlooking topics that are relevant and in the news. And this is Champaign County, and we're supposed to be at least aware of the major topics like that. In regards to the numbers, I can tell you this, you know, you can criticize the numbers, but by and large, the things that are in there and the goals and policies are things that you as a county board member already know about. You already know there are parts of this county where groundwater availability is an issue. Our zoning ordinance already recognizes that fact. Our current land use goals and policies don't, but at least it's reflected in the new ones. And there's a number of instances like that where it is new and it does add in terms of new goals or new policies, but none of it is rocket science. The difficult thing is just being able to conceptualize the whole range of concerns. But again, our job is to explain that to the steering committee. If they think that we've gone overboard, their job is to say, we don't think this is necessary for Champaign County. I think that's the only way to get a good plan. I'm sorry that we didn't start off with that understanding, but again, we're not trying to push anything down the steering committee's throat.
Well, as I read the minutes, one thing that jumps out at me the most is about six people on the committee carrying the conversation all the time.
And it's not to say that the others aren't engaged by listening to both sides of an argument. There are individuals who are who are by nature more articulate, more vocal than others, but I certainly don't see anyone's attention wandering, and they pretty much know when they've heard enough, and they'll call the question. Mr. Langenheim.
In my experience, you get a large committee together, the burden of the conversation is going to be carried on by a few people who are active and forward, but this is the nature of a committee, really.
Ms. Anderson.
And I've only gone to a couple of them, but that's kind of the way I would see it, too. I think they all have the opportunity, and there are a few who are probably more articulate, but I can't remember what particularly, but a few people seem to speak up when there's something that kind of grabs them or they have a different view and have expressed it, and they were pretty quiet otherwise.
Mr. Kurtz.
Well, I've been to a number of these meetings, and I find that the steering committee is very serious and very focused on trying to get out as good a program as they possibly can. And there's been a lot of back and forth and criticism of some points, and many of them have been dropped and changed. And I think there's no loss of focus. They're all concerned, and they all seem to be, and I see quite a few more verbal than others, but that's normal in any large group. But from what I can tell and from my attendance, it's been going well. I have to compliment. There's a lot of work here, and it's taken them a long time, and will take a long time to finish and complete this job.
One thing that I would like to mention is that it would be a good idea to have a more consumable version of this document in the form of an executive summary, perhaps, or some more digestible, easy to pick up and understand the main topics and main points, perhaps. So that can be a goal that we strive to as this process moves along as well.
Let's go on to the mitigation plan.
Okay. Hazard mitigation plan. We're in the process of comparing mitigation actions that had been identified by each jurisdiction And we also met on February 5th, the planning team met and talked about a way to prioritize mitigation actions that have been identified, and that process will be continuing for the next 2 weeks. So working to do this with the six jurisdictions represented on the planning team, U of I, Parkland, Champaign, Urbana, St. Joe, Savoy, and Mahomet. But that's more than six. It's about seven. But getting that together and then staff working on developing those same sets of information for all the remaining jurisdictions that are not represented on the planning team, and then getting it all together in a document for review, which would begin in early March. So that is ongoing as well. Any questions?
Okay, thank you. Anything new on House Bill 2518?
Well, it's we now have an assigned number, House Bill 466. That's the bill that was introduced by Representative Jacobson, and it was assigned to the Cities and Villages Committee, which gave me a bad feeling when I heard that, but I sent an email to Tricia Crowley at the City of Champaign, and you know, it had to be assigned to, that's who the Rules Committee referred it to. It's a different committee than last year, but Tricia is not concerned about that. She thinks that it's going to work out in the end. But the good news is it did get out of Rules Committee and did get assigned to a working committee, and she's assured me that she'll keep the county up to date so that when it does go to the committee and it's proper to give testimony, we can make sure there's someone there to at least represent the county's view.
Mr. Dennis?
I've got to ask a question. Good for who? Because I'm not convinced it'll be good for us.
Okay, let's move on. Zoning ordinance amendment?
All the board members should have, well, all of the committee members should have received a copy of the memo that went to the ZBA for the text amendment for wind farms. It's the preliminary hearing, and even it's preliminary. We didn't even have all of the portions drafted. We hope to have all of them ready by Thursday night. The three wind farm developers have all received packets, and they're studiously preparing comments. So the process will get underway on Wednesday evening.
Thursday. Okay. Mr. Jones?
John, I know we've talked before about setbacks between the windmill and a non-participating landowner, and between the landowner's home. That's what I'm really concerned about with these windmills, especially after going up there Saturday. I'm wondering, the guy from Horizon said that the new windmills that we would have down here would actually be taller and larger than what they've even got up there in McLean. And I wondered if we set down an ordinance of so much of a setback, if it would even be sufficient, given that these might be long. I'm concerned about the shadow flicker is what I'm concerned about. And a neighbor's windmill intruding on someone else's property, that really concerns me about these. We're going to be sticking these up and not having a concern. And I don't know that we can really codify that into the law because we're not going to, or an ordinance, because we're not going to be sure even what size windmills we're going to have, if that's making sense. But he was even saying, the farmer was even saying that, and he was saying this is a problem that hadn't really been addressed that much, is the shadow flicker, especially at different times of the day, early in the morning or late in the evening when the shadows are longer. And I just think that I don't want to gloss over this when we've already got the example up there in McLean to look at of some of the problems they had. I think I'd make sure we try to address that to protect non-participating landowners. And again, I think a lot of my concern with this is we're going to have landowners. Of course, it's a benefit to them. I see the benefit to the landowners. I think a lot of the landowners that will benefit this are probably don't even live on this land. And if they've got an adjacent homeowner that having this obtrusive shadows or noise or whatever coming on his property, they just look pretty close to houses. Especially in the Ellsworth that we drove through, it kind of shocked me when we drove through Ellsworth and there's windmills right on the very edge of town. And I'm sure those people in town didn't get any compensation or didn't, you know, now they've got this windmill right out their back window. you know, and I know a lot of this can't be helped, but I'm just kind of concerned about that, and I don't know if we can address it or not.
Well, we've got a specific, the draft amendment includes a specific requirement for an analysis of shadow flicker, which is very complicated, but at least we're going to have something to look at. Regarding the separations, frankly, Saturday was the first time I've heard any wind farm developer voice support for a 1,500-foot separation. I've talked to Dwight before. He's never mentioned that to me. I wish he had.
Because we were talking about 1,000 before, weren't we?
Yeah, 1,000, and you saw what went out with the draft proposed. It was greater for non-participating, which to me is only fair.
Right.
But anyhow, that's part of the special hearing. I'm sure the other two developers will not voice any support for a 1,500-foot separation requirement. So, you know, that's part of the public hearing. We'll hear from everybody, and the board will make a recommendation. But we have tried to cover shadow flicker as much as possible. And, by the way, any separation has to meet the noise requirement. So it may well be that the noise requirement, in fact, will be the...
I don't know that the noise will be as much of an issue as the site.
Well, there's really not a whole lot you can do about sight when it's so tall. Now, one thing, the height may vary in each special use case. And so you could, as the one model ordinance example indicated, you could base your separations on the height. In my view, the separation is primarily a noise consideration because, let's face it, when these things go up in Champaign County, they're going to be visible for miles. Just like they are in McLean County. But anyhow, that's the thinking that's went into it to date.
Mr. Langenheim?
I may have overlooked it. Is there any provision for inspection of these things by an independent agency? These are a lot. Is there any provision for inspection?
Annual inspections are part of the standard process, so that is a requirement.
Who does the inspecting?
The company does the inspecting.
Now that's...
And you'll get a copy of their reports every year. Every year you'll get a report on the wind farms.
I think you ought to think about that. The company does the inspecting.
Want to walk up 265 feet? You can.
Well,
it's straight up.
One of those wings flies off of there, or if the nacelle bumps into the column and the whole thing collapses and stuff is thrown in all directions. You know, I mean, there's a big potential.
Mr. Weibel?
There is a requirement for liability insurance, which just means that there'll be some money to pay for the damage. But
I think the problem with inspection, who's going to do the inspection? And there are many utilities like it. If I recall the little pamphlet we get from our water company has a list of what's in the water and so on and so forth. It's produced by themselves, and they may not do the testing, but we get it from them. And certainly these companies, you know, it's like driving your car. If you don't put any oil in it, you pay for it. And I would think these companies would, you know, certainly want these turbines to run properly because it's costing them money when they're not turning.
Ms. Ammons?
Isn't there, clearly this is the whole energy independence new move for the government period, isn't there a state agency that would be a government regulatory agency on wind farms? Is that on the horizon? Have you seen anything like that? And Mr. Langenheim's comment initially, I believe maybe about 15 years ago, the Citizens Utility Board was created, maybe 20 years, maybe now, because the inspections were being done by the corporate companies, and so the rate gouging was taking place. And until this board came into being, which was a government agency, there was no regulation over the utilities. And I see the benefit to the farmer. I don't know about the benefit to the schools because we don't have any actual documents for that. But there has to be, it can't be unfettered, just develop however you want type of processes. Because where there are no regulations, then things tend to go until, oops, we figure out one day that that wasn't the best way to do it, and sometimes it's too late. So, you know, I'm kind of watching. I've read the packet, but I couldn't interpret it, so I'm still behind the game on this issue. But those are just concerns that I've seen as I'm trying to understand how this is developing, that there is no regulation. And so we're excited about new technology, but there's always some downfall to that new technology that we've not prepared for. So,
Mr. Weibel?
I'll make an inquiry at Springfield to find out if there's any ongoing legislature concern regulation or if there's any what we have on the books right now.
Okay. Let's turn our attention to transportation. Ms. George?
Hi, I'm Nicole George. I'm from RPC, and I'm a transportation planner there. In October of 2007, you guys had looked at the ICCT, which stands for the Interagency Coordination Committee on Transportation Primer Process, because IDOT had allocated funding for all the counties in Illinois under Safety Lou to provide rural public transportation. So Champaign County for 3 years was awarded almost $450,000, but to get this money you have to go through the primer process, which is five phases. And currently, the Champaign County Transit Partnership Group is in phase two, which is a data collection phase. We're doing community surveys, agency surveys, and inventory of resources. And we need assistance from everyone that we can get in getting 1,500 surveys of people in the rural area, anywhere outside Champaign-Urbana and Savoy. We need 1,500, and right now we have 428. So we have still quite a ways to go. I have some of the surveys. They are some of the community surveys. They are available in Spanish, and it's also available online. We've had agencies get surveys from their clients. We've sent it out to county employees. Other agencies have sent it to their employees. So we're just trying to gather any ideas on getting more surveys in for the community process so that we can move forward on establishing and more of an idea the type of service that is needed in rural Champaign County. So does anybody have any questions? Yes.
I just had one. On the I've attended the first maybe two mm-hmm. meetings or so, but on the grant, is there a time frame that it has to be completed in order to get the money?
The initial letter that went to the county board chairs was the project needed to be initiated and a service should be started by summer of 2010. However, since this is a requirement that IDOT has given to every county going through this process, the ICCT Clearinghouse that is doing this process has 23 counties across the state going through this. So I think that that's something that may be looked at. We want to get this going as soon as possible for Champaign County because there's already providers in surrounding counties that are providing service to the residents of this area. So we would really like to be holding up the end of Champaign County serving our own residents. So right now it's supposed to be at 2010, but there may be some sort of extension with IDOT. Yes.
Nicole, is this service, let's say hypothetically down the road, is provided, do you think it's going to be provided by the CUMTD?
What this process is doing, actually in phase three, which is the next phase, We are trying to gather the inventory of all the providers of service. So CUMTD plus any human service agencies, nursing homes, anyone that has a vehicle and providing any types of service, they'll be brought together during phase three, and then they'll be broken into three groups. There's a legislative outreach group, a public education group, and a contract development group. And since I'm the HSTP coordinator covering 18 counties, I'm working with this in several counties, other counties as well. And typically the members of the contract group are anyone that provides a service. So what they'll do is take all of the survey information and look at what type of service is needed. And those agencies that are already providing some type of service will say what they could give. So it wouldn't necessarily be CUMTD. It could be another provider from another county, which Champaign County could enter into an intergovernmental agreement with that would also serve this county. A human service agency may be the one that ends up providing that service. It's really based on what the community and the agencies and the people there that are participating in the group decide would be the best way to serve the people that need that transportation. So that's why we're trying to get as many people involved and as much information as possible, because then you can really, it's really trying to focus on a grassroots working people to get everyone's input to form the ideal service. So does that answer your question? Okay. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, I believe the young man has a question.
Yes. Okay.
So at this point, Nicole, what would you like from this group? Nicole? What would you like from this group? Suggestions about how to reach people to fill out this survey?
Yes, any suggestions that you guys have to do that. I'm also going to be sending out the announcement for the next meeting. The next meeting is February 20th at 9 a.m. at the Illinois Terminal. I'll be sending that out to everyone on the county board. Okay. We'll be getting my email or a letter. So if you guys could give any information, fill out surveys yourselves, have anyone fill those out, that'd be great. And your participation is really wanted. Yes.
But I live in Champaign. You want people outside.
We've gotten quite a bit of support of people that are in Champaign and Urbana. We really need that support of the people outside who this is really serving. It's been really hard to get in contact with some of the local village presidents and try to schedule a meeting like that. So any ideas that you guys have in getting those people to the table would be greatly appreciated.
Have you tried, like, say, the churches out in the rural community to see if they would distribute among their members?
We've tried contacting churches, also the food pantries. The only one we actually had success with was the Stone Creek Church in Urbana, which did have a few rural residents that did come and get food from their food pantry. We did do some surveys at the Homer's Festival that they had. That got some surveys. And we also distributed them at all of the libraries throughout the rural area. That didn't turn out very well except for St. Joe and Muhammad. We kind of got a little bit of numbers and Rantoul, but we're just still needing a lot more. So, yeah.
Chris?
After the initial 3 years, where do you anticipate the funding coming from after that?
The funding will be allocated. We're hoping, since the new transportation bill is up in 2009, but it'll probably be quite a while before the next one is actually in effect. So we're thinking, with the administration that has just taken office, they're continuing the coordination of transportation services within their agenda for transportation. So we're hoping that funding will also continue. This funding has been available for 30 years to all counties in Illinois, and they just haven't taken advantage of it. So there is money. And also, with the gathering of the participants of a variety of agencies, there's actually 62 federal funding streams that provide money for transportation in one way or another that are not associated with the U.S. DOT and can actually be used as a local match. So bringing all of those agencies to the table and getting the federal funding, it should be That should be the way we'll get they could get the funding to provide the service.
Where is IDOT's funding stream coming from?
This funding stream for this is called the 5311, which is for rural public transportation, and it's coming from FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, for this program. Anything?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's turn our attention to some of the cases that we have in front of us. First is subdivision case 194-08. This is the McCulley subdivision. Need a motion to get this on the table. Motion by Mr. Jones, seconded by Mr. Schrader. Discussion. Somebody here to speak to this, right? Oh, Mr. Burns, do you want to say something at this point?
Thank you. Only prepared to answer any questions that you might have. It's a relatively minor situation involving estate planning for a couple.
Any discussion?
I have a question, Mr. Burns.
Mr. Weibel?
Mr. Burns, there's an existing house on a property right now.
Yes, sir. Riley and Lois McCulley's house.
Is that the house they plan to live in?
They already plan to live somewhere else where they need a better physical situation to live.
So we're talking about use for new owners then.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understood the question.
Well, they're subdividing this lot, but they said they're moving to a different place?
Yes. They need to live in a different situation in Champaign where they can live closer to health services.
Also, they just want to retain the other property then?
The rest of the farm, they're keeping yes.
Okay.
All right. That's all family owners.
Ms. Anderson.
Yeah, I was a little confused too. On page 24, under 2A, it says, this is a one-lot subdivision of an existing farmstead that will not result in any new dwelling or need of a septic tank. So I wasn't quite sure why we were going through this whole process. Is that, you know, somebody else wanted to come and build another house instead
No.
of living in the old farmhouse. Does this make that possible?
This has nothing to do with any new homes or new development. It's only the existing house, and they already have, in fact, two septic tank systems at the home right now. There's no intention to build anything else, no new home, no anything at all.
The lot is less than 5 acres in area, so it needs to have a plat of subdivision to approve that. It's just an administrative thing.
Uh-huh.
And it also has already received a variance for maximum lot area from the Zoning Board of Appeals. But again, this is just an administrative procedure so that they can create a tract that's less than 5 acres and then sell it or somehow deal with it as part of the estate of Riley McCulley.
Oh, which would separate it then from the rest of the...
Yes.
Okay. Well, when I read that, I was, you know, I thought it, when I first started reading all this, it was to make another plot for someone to build a house on.
Okay. The only way a new house could result from this is if they could somehow afford to tear down the existing and build a new. But
and then they could replace it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of approving case 194-08, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The next is case 635-AM-08. This is the Country Arbors Nursery, Inc. Motion by Mr. Schrader, seconded by Mr. Jones. Is there any discussion? Mr. Kurtz.
We received this. It's just a larger version of the passion we have.
That is the subsidiary drainage plat for the subdivision, so it didn't change anything. We didn't have it when we sent out the packet, but now we have it, so it's in complete conformance.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Mr. Weibel.
I believe this is the case that Mr. Rose would like to talk about.
Okay. Mr. Rose, you want to come forward?
My name's Dean Rose. My wife and I live next door to Country Arbor's Nursery. We were involved with the Zoning Board of Appeals during that process when they were trying to get their designation as Ag 2. At that time, we had submitted some information to that board regarding the property description, which never made it into the report that has come to this committee. And so we feel there's still some error in the information that has been forwarded to you. And I prepared a letter which I could read into the record if you'd like. If you don't have any objection. Or have you read it?
I'm a little confused. You're saying that the information we don't have is
The information that came from the Zoning Board of Appeals is incomplete. The legal description of the property, for example. And then there's also a map that I feel is misleading.
John, this is evidence that was in front of ZBA. This isn't anything new.
This was discussed at the ZBA. I know Mr. Rose thinks that we've ignored his comments. I can assure you we have not. Mr. Rose simply wants the documents to record that there is an easement over his land that the Country Arbors uses. Now, that easement is not part of the rezoning. It in no way decreases the amount of land Mr. Rose owns. It was indicated improperly in the first site plan. It's since been corrected, and it's just a site plan in a special use permit case. It doesn't change the amount of land he owns. It doesn't authorize any new use or ownership. We've tried to make that clear to Mr. Rose, but we apparently haven't been successful doing that.
What is his objection?
Well, I just feel that the record should be complete. I feel that there should be an accurate legal description in the report that comes before this committee. And it just seemed to me that the map that had been submitted kind of conflates the idea of property ownership and easement, and they are different instruments. And it's our concern that you have a map here that is being entered into the public record that, you know, gives an impression of ownership, you know, where one in fact does not exist.
Go ahead.
And so we just wished, it's our desire that the documents before you be amended to include the correct description of the real estate. And also, like I say, the map shows a property line going over our property, and that is inaccurate, and that could cause problems for us in the future.
Mr. Weibel?
Well, I would agree with what Mr. Rose says about the map. Particularly with the map, page 29. In the lower right corner, lower right corner, if you turn it sideways, so north is going away from you. You see the word easement there? I believe at the top of that, there should be a property line going all the way across. If you look at this map, just look at property lines, look at that easement is not owned by Mr. Rose. It looked like it would be owned by
it wouldn't be an easement then.
Well, yeah, but still, there's no property line across the easement.
But it wouldn't be an easement, though.
Shouldn't the property line be cut across there?
Well,
I mean, it's an easement still. It's Mr. Rose's property.
I understand that, but I think that...
Okay, let me rephrase this then, Mr. Schrader.
Mr. Weibel, let's let Mr. Schrader make
Okay, all right. Okay.
I'll make it real quick.
Okay.
I don't want to step on your toes. Just that if it's labeled easement, then... if it was with the property, if the landscape company owned that, I don't think it would be a labeled easement.
Well, I think the label's correct.
Well, it represents that they don't own that.
The question is, when you say they don't own that?
Well, Country Arbors doesn't own that. Why would they need the right easement on that property if they own it?
No, no, I'm not saying about the label. The label's correct.
Okay.
I don't disagree with that.
Right.
Okay.
I understand.
What I'm saying is that if I think that, look at the dash dot lines that surrounded Mr. Rose's property.
Mm-hmm.
It goes down along the west side of the easement. You see that there?
There's also a dash dot line that goes, on the west side of the
easement. On the west side of the easement.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But really, the property line should be over all, it looks like it should be. Shouldn't the property line extend all the way across the north, the little, just top cap off the north end of the easement?
But that, I think that's my point, though, and maybe I'm wrong. But
could I?
Mr. Hall has a thought here.
Pius, you're absolutely right. This plan should have a dash line there. That being said, it doesn't change the ownership of the underlying real estate. We understand, in the documents of record, it's explained as an easement. I don't think we've ever actually seen a recorded legal description, and JR, correct me if I'm wrong, of the type that Mr. Rose has submitted on his letter of February 9th. That's a wonderful legal description there that he's added the easement description to, but you'll note that he's added that. It wasn't part of the recorded legal description.
I did not add that. That came out of the real estate packet when we bought the house. I didn't type that in.
Was it underlined?
No, I underlined that because the first time I submitted it, I assumed you didn't see it.
Okay.
So this time I underlined it just to make sure it stood out from the rest of the information you had.
Okay.
And I can understand why Mr. Rose would want that public record. I understand that.
Yeah, because it's an easement is not a possessory is a non-possessory interest. Yes,
right, exactly. So,
Mr. Langenheim, and then Ms. Ammons.
What's the objection to acceding to this? Does it change anything?
I'm not certain what Mr. Rose actually wants changed.
You're not sure?
No.
Oh.
Well, for example, on page. Let's see. Well, I on page 29, let's see. I think there needs to be a written reference to the easement in the legal description, and at the moment that does not appear on the page 31, bottom of item 2. I think the legal description should add the easement language.
That should appear on the map also.
At the end of this legal description. What I have is the same.
Well, if I understand this, and I'm not sure I do, the county accedes to the fact that he owns the land and the nursery has an easement, right? And you say that is not adequately presented in the description or in the map or both?
It's not. It does not appear in the text of the documents before this committee, and the map is misleading, and I fear it could be used against us in the future because it shows it presents new information. It presents what I feel is misleading information.
Is what Mr. Rose proposing changing the situation on the ground, the counties or the nurseries? Position with regard to this easement. Well, then why don't you just put it in there? It isn't going to hurt anything, is it?
This is an approved finding of fact by the Zoning Board of Appeals. This committee does not ordinarily reach in and change things. You can send it back to the ZBA and have a new version done that way.
Would that satisfy you?
Well, I would like to see. It came to this committee and it said finding of fact, and I say that it is still not quite factual, and so I would like to see something that is factual.
Let's get Ms. Ammons' question in.
I was going to ask the same one Mr. Langenheim asked, but because Mr. Hall said that it doesn't change ownership or anything, then I would move that this be returned to the ZBA to make the correction so that the recorded description is accurate.
And you understand that won't, I mean, it'll
I understand it's going to delay the
country
arbors.
And then it'll achieve Mr. Rose's goal, but it won't change any of the facts in the case.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dennis.
Is this easement?
Point of order, I believe Ms. Ames made a motion.
Yeah, is there a... Okay. Go ahead.
And the document that's in the finding of fact is the document that we were given by the petitioner. So it's not like we edited it. So...
Okay, so we now have a motion made by Ms. Ammons, seconded by Mr. Langenheim to send this new description back to ZBA. So... Yes, Mr. Dennett.
Is this a recorded easement?
It's recorded in the legal description. I mean,
I still don't understand the issue.
Well, because
it's recorded in the recorder's office, he goes with the property.
That's correct.
Then what's the issue?
Well, because now you have an implied, you could have a situation where you have an implied by platting, and so now all of a sudden you have a new map that comes out of this committee and is approved by the board. That conceivably a court could use show something else. I mean, it's an easement. It was an easement yesterday. It's an easement today. We want it to be an easement tomorrow. We don't want there to be confusion in the record. And what this committee has is a confused...
One more question,
go ahead.
Why wasn't this taken care of at ZBA the first time? Remanding this back is a bad deal.
I was there at both ZBA hearings, and I submitted this information at that point. I mean, my information was ignored.
Is it relevant?
Well, they have their opinion, and I have mine. And I saw that I think it's still inaccurate. I mean, it says on this report here, it says a finding of fact. And you have a legal description there that does not record the easement.
Mr. Schrader.
Mr. Rose, do you pay taxes on this easement?
We pay taxes on the property, and so the easement would be...
That is two documentations you have already. So I would agree with Mr. Dennett. The finding of fact is one thing. We have a map here that's recorded and received January 23rd, 2009, that shows and says easement on it. But you have two documentations already within the county that have more legal teeth than anything that comes out of the ZBA or comes out of ELUC or comes out of the county board. I understand your concerns, and it is in testimony, so it is part of the document. I mean, it is part of the information with this. It can be gleaned back. There is information in this. So I don't know if Mr. Hall, maybe he can answer. I don't know if there's a timetable for this rezoning, if there's a special use permit coming or a variance coming with this, if the petitioner has a timetable with this, or what, I would hate to delay this.
The Country Arbors folks are not in a particular hurry. Their plans changed during the course of the public hearing. They're just trying to be a good citizen and bring their long-standing nonconformities into conformity. And just to clarify something, there's no platting going on here. We were given a legal description by the applicant. It was the legal description that we were presented with. Apparently, Mr. Rose has a different legal description. The difference is the easement. I wonder if they maybe were prepared at different times. In any event, none of Mr. Rose's land is being rezoned. There has been, and this is the reason the ZBA didn't do anything. They understood the easement. They understood what that was all about. They thought it was crystal clear. This committee has not seen the special use finding, so you're without that information.
Mr. Weibel?
I would agree with Mr. Schrader that although a map may not reflect what Mr. Rose wants, or he may be correct, I mean, I'm no expert in that, but the record in this meeting indicates that we generally agree with what he's concerned about. And therefore, if anybody was trying to use this map to change, say, the size of Mr.'s claim that the easement doesn't belong to him, this discussion here would not support that. And that's a matter of public record and recorded.
Ms. Ammons?
Question is on page 31, the legal description, Mr. Hall, that was presented by the petitioner, however they came up with it, did they have an opportunity to speak to Mr. Rose before they presented that legal description? I think what it seems simple to me, as you said, it's not going to change the special use permit that was agreed by the ZBA. But the question is, if there is a legal description of the property submitted to be fact, that is, in essence, not exactly fact, why would we not want that to be as accurate as possible? I'm thinking of a small incident in the community where there was a fence arrived on our property that costed me a lot of money just to cut my tree down. I mean, it seems simple. It was on my side, but there was a dispute. And so could maybe some future disagreement come up? Possibly. But would it be most beneficial at this point to make sure that the description is not just a description that was submitted by the petitioner, but reflects the rest of the party that may not necessarily be directly affected by it, but is part of the legal description? Could we correct this without the situation that's currently gone?
Well, the question on this.
I asked him a question. Could we correct this?
I can't answer that question, Ms. Ammons, because in the past, the state's attorney has always advised the committee that if you want something in a finding of fact changed, you send it back to the ZBA. That's the only way this committee has ever had anything changed. And so that's what it would require, to my understanding.
Mr. Dennett.
The legal description we were given by Country Arbors is identical to the one that Mr. Rose submitted prior to where Mr. Rose's says subject to. For some reason, the legal description that Country Arbors gave us did not have that thing, the phrase subject to. However, they were open and very clear on the fact that they had the right to use the easement. So it's not like they were operating off of different legals, and I don't know why that is, because they both explained the easement. There was no confusion about the easement. It could have been drafted better in the plan, but I got to tell you, there's a lot that could have been drafted better about that plan. But it's the best we could get in the time we had.
Mr. Dennis?
Well, in my tenure here, which has been several years, ZBA has always done a very complete job. And quite frankly, I don't think we need to be micromanaging that. If they heard the same thing we're hearing tonight, which I'm being told that they did. Is that right?
Mr. Rose, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you hand out a copy of this legal description to the ZBA?
Yes, that was included in the original documents that I submitted to you.
If they didn't deal with it, then I would put to you that they think it's accurate, and I'll call for it.
May I add something as well?
Question is called. Oh.
Question's been called, sir. The discussion is over. Okay. So the motion that we have on the floor is to send this case back to ZBA so that the description matches everything else. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Noes, carry it. Okay, so now we're back to the original motion. Oh, no, we're not.
Yes,
yeah.
We are.
Yes, we are. We need to, we have a motion on the floor to approve Case 635 something.
AM 08.
Okay. Mr. Weibel.
One more question for Mr. Rose, if I may.
Sure.
If the document in front of us did not have that map, would that make a difference in your opinion about this?
The map came in two stages. The initial map that was provided did not have the word easement written in it until I had, you know, made a comment in the first meeting. But you see, it still retains the property line. They initially tried to show a property line. I mean, their map initially showed it as part of their property. It was only after later that they penciled in the word easement at a second meeting. So you have several generations in that map, and that's why the map is misleading. It was initially shown as their property, and then later it was they penciled in the word easement. But then there's nothing about easement in the written text to refer. To refer back to in the report that you're looking at. So it would be very confusing for anyone looking at this finding of fact to see exactly how this ever...
I'm looking at page 29, and that map says January 23rd, and it has easement on it in our packet.
There was a prior map to that. There were two meetings of the zoning board, and the first map did not have the word easement written on it. It was only after the first meeting that I spoke up about the easement that they wrote easement in there, and I submitted some documents at that time that showed that there was an easement.
Ms. Ammons.
My question is, I don't understand this enough, but it just seems elementary to me. In legal terms, if this is pulled directly from the recorder, right, for real estate, why would the last part be left off? What's the purpose? It is a legal description, like my legal description of my property. Why would they pull a description and leave that off? That which is provided already, which is already in text. I don't understand that.
It's two different legal descriptions from two different points in time.
So this, both of them did not come from the recorder.
Both of them came from the recorder, but the recorder might have, every time a property changes hands, there's a new legal description. We do not do a search to make sure we've got the latest legal description, because the only thing that changed was the addition of the description of the easement. It has no effect on the land being rezoned, which is all this case is really about, is rezoning land.
Mr. Langenheim.
What does the easement provide? Right of passage or the right to build a road?
Ingress and egress only for the benefit, yeah.
And what's the situation on the ground? What do they do, just go across grass?
No, they keep it up. They put gravel down on the road occasionally.
Gravel down.
Yeah.
Put a road,
which is
there.
Part of the duty of an easement owner.
So that ground can only be used for getting in and out of there, right? As it stands now.
Yeah, I cannot prevent them from going across, and they cannot misuse it. It's a different form of property. It's not really property. It's a use that they have of the
can we call the
of our property.
Well, Mr. Schrader had his hand up before you made that.
If I may just put an in comment on this, please, on the easement. There's no ownership in the easement, but my point is I think actually Country Harbors were being very gentlemanly about this, because without this legal description, it's not part of the rezoning. It's still Ag 1. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be Ag 2. So I think they were probably showing you respect by not trying to change the zoning on your property. So
their first map drew a property line on our property,
but it doesn't now. It does not now.
No, there's still a property line that going. That map looks like a property line to me and to anyone else.
It doesn't to me.
They just wrote easement on it.
Easement.
And there's nothing in the text to refer back.
I'm just saying, your text is not complete.
Mr. Rose,
you have two
Mr.
places.
Mr. Schrader has the floor, okay. Let him speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have two places that are documented in the county records where you are the owner of that easement, if there's such a thing. Mr. Dennis is right. The thing is it's not part of the rezoning. That's why Country Arbors didn't put it in there. It's not part of the rezoning. It stays Ag 1. The rest of the property lines, which can be clearly identified, stay Ag 1. The other property the Country Arbors is asking is Ag 2. That's all I want to say.
And the question has been called. Okay, so the motion is to accept case 635-AM-08. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next. Yes.
Can I say that this kind of discussion here is really not appropriate, in my opinion? This should have been taken care of the ZBA. That's what they're for.
Right. I agree.
I mean, we could curtail that.
Yes, we, yeah. I didn't realize it was going to go in this direction tonight. Okay. So the next case is 520-AM-05. This is Gene and Carolyn Bateman. Is there a motion?
I'm moving.
Bateman property?
Yes. Yes.
I'd like to speak on
just that. Wait till we get a motion on the floor, sir. Motion's been made by Ms. Anderson, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. Discussion. Is there anyone from the committee first who wants to talk now? Yes, Mr. Hall.
After the ELEC agenda went out, I had contact from Mr. Bateman's attorney, Mike Tagg, who's here tonight. The background on this case is that since Mr. Bateman proposed this RRO, the zoning ordinance has been changed. There are now specific requirements in, related to pipeline impact radius, and he would like to revise his plan to give us a plan that, in his view, you know, conforms better with the zoning requirements. But the only way that can happen is for this committee to remand this case back to the ZBA. If we could have taken it there to the ZBA to begin with, believe me, we could have. But it had to come back here first. And the same thing is true about case 12 also, although that petitioner could not be here tonight.
Does someone want to make a motion to send both of these cases back to ZBA?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Schrader, seconded by Mr. Kurtz, to send 520-AM-05. And 542-AM-06 back to ZBA. Is there a discussion? Ms. Anderson.
I guess I have a question about not this one, but the next one that ZBA recommended not accepting. Are they proposing something to make it more acceptable? Or?
Apparently so. I haven't seen it, but he's working on an alternative plan. Now, again, when the ZBA last saw this, there were no requirements for pipeline impact radius, so they were doing what they thought made sense. Under the new requirements that have been added in the ordinance, that plan is in full conformance.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, so the motion is to send these two cases back to ZBA. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. All right. That was easy enough.
Pass the buck.
Okay. Is there anything the county board chair would like to share with the group?
Yes. Special report tonight. I want to talk about the meeting that Mr. Langheim went to at the meeting of the Township Supervisors, which was a week ago last Thursday. I did not attend that meeting. All of you got an invitation to that, and I recommend you not go because of the Open Meetings Act. And frankly, when we got the invitation, I wasn't sure why we should go. Now I know, but I want to report that to you. I've talked to Mr. Jim Russ a couple times about his idea. His idea actually, it was his idea, another supervisor's name. I can't recall who that person was. But they had this idea about the wind farms. What they would like to do is they like to create an authority to own and run, perhaps develop two wind farms in Champaign County. The authority would consist of some sort of authority based as to be a township county type authority. I will say right away that the county does not have currently does not have the authority to sell electricity to the grid. We have the county can actually own or can we can construct windmills, wind turbines on our property, but only for our own for use only own use only. Townships do not have the ability to own utilities. In fact, the county does not have that either, because neither of us have home rule authority. Mr. Russ' idea is that this authority would own and sell the electricity back to the grid, and it would, of course, make a profit. Now, I should go back and say the money that would be used to develop and build this wind farm would come from the Obama stimulus package, which now has a new name, but I prefer the old name because it's simple. That is somewhat creative use of that money. It probably would cost $100 to $200 million or more, depending on how big the wind farms are. It's a possibility. I've been looking at the congressional bills to see if that's possible. I've not found anything yet that would allow us to do that. However, it does seem that that possibility is there. Their idea is that this would be a great profit to the county, and the fact that, you know, it would reduce taxes. That seemed to be one of the big points. I'm not sure if you got the same idea from that, Mr. Langenheim. Let me finish speaking first, though. It was an interesting idea. He has spoken to Bill Black about this. Bill Black is actually putting together legislature to enact that. But Mr. Russ thinks that this would be should have no problem going through the state, changing all the laws so that will allow the townships and the counties to create an authority so that we could own, develop, and run and wind farms and sell the electricity. I'm not that optimistic as Mr. Rusk is, and Mr. Black is not as optimistic either. He said, however, he would create a bill and run it through his legal team and see just to put out there for some feelers. Now, one of the consequences of this, though, is that in order for Mr. Rusk's plan to go ahead, we would have to stop or not create an ordinance to allow wind farms to come into the county in the meantime. So there is some real decision that we have to involve. Now, I don't think we need to do that now. We should go ahead with our ZBA meetings. Ultimately, it's going to come back to the county board anyway. At that time, then, we'd have to make a decision. I'm hoping that by that time, Mr. Black has floated this legislature out from at least the House. I'm not sure if it's going to go through this, if he's got somebody to put it to the Senate or not. I doubt that. To see what the reaction would be. Again, Mr. Rusk was very optimistic that he said it was going to be bipartisan. Everybody will want this, implying that every county will want this and that every county is going to get all this money from the federal government to build wind farms all over Illinois. So I'm willing to entertain questions. Or if Mr. Langenheim wants to add anything to that. Use your microphone, though.
I can't watch you if I'm using the microphone.
Well, you're speaking, though.
This thing is charitably, as it was presented on Thursday, I think Pius might agree, half-baked.
I didn't want to say that.
Three-quarters baked?
Anyway, these people have enthusiasm, they've got an idea, and they don't have any real background or experience or have not made any really substantial progress towards realizing the idea. But it does have some attractive points of view, and I'd like to see them have their run at it. If they bring something in that will fly, it might be a very good way to solve some of our problems.
Ms. Evans?
Mr. Hall, in your experience, I know California has lots and lots of these type of things already. Have we looked at some of their process, and is it all either privately owned or is there a public entity involved in any of those?
I'm not familiar with any arrangement like has been proposed here.
I don't necessarily mean what they're proposing, but what has already been operating in other states. Have you had any time to look at if there are public entities that own their own power through the windmill in these two? I know California has lots, but well,
I really haven't spent any time at all on that.
Mr. Langenheim?
We have one right here in the state, Springfield Power and Light. And we have the co-op group that Rantoul belongs to. And if you compare the rates and service of those entities to the other entities, the private entities, you find that the service is comparable and the rates are significantly lower.
They exist.
TVA is out there, too.
Mr. Dennett.
Yeah, like Mr. Langenheim said, there are several municipally owned power companies in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are, yeah.
The city's got them. I think I don't know if it'll fly, but I think it bears letting them look at it.
I don't think those folks up there realize how much
fee to it. Agreed. Or money.
They have a lot of enthusiasm.
Ms. Anderson.
Well, that's why Mr. Rusk was on the Farm Bureau tour, and I didn't hear him say on the way home. I just wondered, after hearing how much time and effort went in from Horizon, the planners, you know, everybody, it was a several year with people with expertise, that I was just curious what his thinking was after he heard all that, and I don't know.
Ms. Ammons?
I'm sorry, I'm so new to this idea. I'm just thinking of things as we go. But the university, they are doing some research as well. And as this group of township supervisors or whoever, did they mention that
they canceled the turbines?
Okay, they canceled the turbines. That's why I was wondering if the university had some.
What's the cost?
Yep.
They canceled the turbines.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay, I'm sure we'll hear more about this one way or the other. Anything else, Mr. Weibel?
I will try to keep you updated as far as what happens to the legislature.
Thank you. Monthly reports?
There are no monthly reports this month.
Okay. So, the the only thing going on the county board agenda will be the subdivision case 194-08, and that will be on consent.
I voted against that.
No,
you voted against the rezoning.
Which one are you talking about?
The one at the bottom of the first of the agenda.
Oh, the McCulley subdivision.
Yeah. Yes, the other one will go on the regular agenda. Any other business? Okay. We stand adjourned.
Finally.
Or till next month.
This complaint is a matter of public record now here, so.
Well, the energy business is real, and you know, it's getting higher.